In April 1994, the Central African nation of Rwanda exploded into violence. Upwards of 800,000 people died, mostly members of the Tutsi minority, in a genocide carried out by the majority Hutus. All of this happened in the space of 100 days. Most of what the world remembers about the Rwandan genocide a decade later are terrible stories of neighbors killing neighbors, acts of betrayal by priests and nuns, the slaughter of innocents, and the failure of the rest of the world to intervene. But there are other stories of people who resisted the message to kill and people who refused to turn their backs in order to save their own lives. Stephen Smith of American Radio Works produced this story about two men, one an American missionary with the Seventh-day Adventist Church, and the other a Rwandan Hutu. Together, they saved the lives of hundreds of people.
My name's Carl Wilkins. I was the director of the Adventist Development Relief Agency in Rwanda. Moved there in the spring of 1990. Our youngest was a year old, and Mindy was probably around five at that point.
My name is Damas Gisimba, and I'm the director of Gisimba Memorial Association in Kigali. We have an orphanage here, and we also take care of kids in Nyamirambo neighborhood who have troubled families.
Before the genocide began, we had heard rumors about pickup trucks, load of machetes coming into Nyamirambo and some of the other townships. So you knew something was brewing.
There were many signs of trouble ahead. Militia groups aligned with the Hutu hardliners and the government were bragging how they would kill anyone who supported rebel Tutsi army. These militias had been training themselves how to kill ordinary citizens. Although I'm a Hutu, they said I was a Tutsi sympathizer because I didn't agree with their Hutu power ideology.
Here is the CBC News.
Belgians and minority Tutsi tribespeople appear to be the objects of a killing spree in Kigali, the capital.
The evening of April 6th, I was at home.
This latest violence began on Wednesday night after the president of Rwanda died in a plane crash.
As soon as the news broke that the presidential plane had been shot down, I immediately left for the orphanage to calm the children.
My name is Alphonse Kalisa. I was one of the orphans at Gasimba. That night, we had a lot of gunfire. There had been rumors going around that if anything bad happens, the Hutus will start slaughtering us Tutsis.
What are you hearing? What are you seeing?
We're seeing people running for their lives, houses being grenaded, people being shot. Some of them are being butchered by machetes.
In our house, we moved away from all of the windows, we had a wide hallway. And we all spent the nights in the hallway, tried to sleep.
This is April 7th, and we're watching TV in the hall. And now things are more or less quiet in our area, but we can still hear fire in farther parts of the city. So,
government soldiers and militias went door to door in our neighborhood. They called for the Hutus to come out and start your work. The job has begun. And all of a sudden, our neighbors, who had lived with us for many years, started killing people all around us.
My name is Raki Omar. I'm the director of the human rights organization African Rights. I myself was here in Kigali, and I mean, in Rwanda, they referred to Tutsis as cockroaches. They were not human beings, and this is very important to understand, I think, very close parallels with what happened in Hitler's Germany. Do not worry, you're not killing human beings like you. You are killing some vermin that belongs under your shoe. You know, you're killing cockroaches.
There were so many people coming to the orphanage to hide, looking for safety, 300 or 400 people. Damas had heard that the militia were going to attack the orphanage because of all the people coming in.
We were on the radio in our house, and they were telling us over the radio, there's people out front in the front yard being killed right now. Please try to get help to us. I tried to get in touch with local authorities, and there was no way. I tried the UN soldiers. There was no way. And all of a sudden, I look up, and there in the doorway are our kids. Just frozen, listening to this horror play out over the radio.
Hey,
In this room, P. Mugabo and his wife and three others were hiding.
My family and I live next door to Gasimba, so we came here. Gasimba told me that because I was such a well-known opponent of the government, I would be especially wanted. So he said it would be best for me and my family to hide in the orphanage infirmary. There were six of us. During the day, the four women hid in the closet, and we two men in this toilet room. I had to crouch a bit, not to be seen through the window. Imagine, we stayed in this place for 3 months.
I knew I was taking a huge risk hiding them. If Mugabo and his family were caught here, the militia would have killed us all. But I had been talking to my children for so long about the need for unity between Hutus and Tutsis. I couldn't change my mission now.
Hundreds of foreigners managed to escape from Rwanda in the past 12 hours. Thousands more are waiting for the first opportunity to flee.
I'm Laura Lane, and I was serving as the political security and consular officer at the American Embassy in Kigali, Rwanda. And I remember calling, you know, all the Americans and saying, okay, here's your evacuation point, here's where you need to move to. And I remember making the call to Carl, and he said, Laura, there's people here, they're depending on me, I can't go.
You know, right there in front of me was our house girl who's a Tutsi. She had worked for us for several years. I knew as soon as we left, she would be slaughtered. There's a young man who was our night watchman, a Tutsi. He'd be slaughtered. And there was no way that convoys were letting anybody take any Rwandans with them. And at the time my family was evacuating, we lived on a dirt road, and I watched my family drive away down the road. I walked back up to the gate, closed it and locked it. But as I went back up there and I knelt down on the floor with our house girl and with our night watchman, and we prayed for the safety of my family, it was a pretty empty feeling.
Concern about the evacuation. It has to be remembered that it's not foreigners, but Rwandans who are dying in their thousands in this desperate madness of killing.
The propaganda of the genocide is that God and the world had abandoned the Tutsis. This was a very, very recurrent theme, that you can kill the Tutsis because, look, the world has turned its back on them, God doesn't want them, nobody wants them.
This is the place. There was a huge pit here being dug for a neighborhood latrine. When the genocide started, the government used the pit for bodies.
My name is Claudine. They took us to the pit near Gisimba's place. They made us stand on a plank over the pit and hit us with clubs or machetes so we would fall into the hole. When it was my turn, they told me to pull off my rosary. They said, "You have no God now." I had a baby on my back. But they said to leave it. It's better you die with the baby. They started clubbing my legs, and I found myself in the pit. Somehow a dead body rolled over on top and hid me.
A boy came out later to tell me there were people calling out from the pit. I told them to stay quiet, and we would come get them out at night.
They threw us into that pit in the morning, and we stayed until 10 at night.
We pulled two women out of the pit. One had a baby on her back, but it was dead. It suffocated. We brought the women to stay with us at the orphanage.
If anybody else is listening to this tape, it is not for you. It is not for your ears.
When I finally came to the point of accepting that I could die there, I wanted to, hopefully, if I could, leave something behind. And so I started making tapes to Teresa.
To my Teresa Lynn.
I wrote her name and my parents' address in Spokane, Washington on each one of those tapes, thinking even if this house eventually gets looted or something, maybe somehow or another the tape would find its way to her.
The National Bank buildings where they're digging little foxholes and stuff there.
Oh yeah, I guess I didn't talk much about Sunday's mean gun battle. Man, I just laid on my mattress in the hallway, holding the Bible on my chest, repeating some psalms, thinking about...
Brought the animals all inside. The monkey's tied up to our sink in our bathroom. He doesn't like this very well.
We lost electricity and water last night. Don't know.
Our neighborhood people already knew that there were two Tutsis in the house. They had seen them. They had threatened us. You know, next time your white man comes out, we're going to kill him. We know he's keeping people there. For 3 weeks, we didn't leave our house.
The children went so long without eating meat, and we had about 600 guinea pigs at the orphanage for the children to play with. So during the genocide, we ate them. I told the children it was goat.
This is Wednesday, April 27. Happy anniversary, Mom and Dad. Oh boy, what a day this has been.
Finally, the government said heads of organizations, of businesses, can leave their houses, come to the government headquarters, get a permit to travel around the city. From that point on, we started moving about, working with finding food, water, and meds for the orphans.
This American showed up at the orphanage. He said he was stopping by just to see if anyone here needed help. I told him we needed water the most. Carl Wilkins promised to come back the next day with water and anything else he could get his hands on. I kept wondering how this guy will get past so many checkpoints. And besides the checkpoints, there were bullets flying everywhere.
So it would have been a daily trip through hell for anybody who was here. There were just so many roadblocks manned by drunken militia men who were waving machetes. Their hands were so stained with blood.
And to my surprise, Carl came back the next day with water and lots of goodies. And the next day, and the next day. There were some days he could not reach us because the militia blocked him or let the air out of his tires. But Carl kept his promise. He was fearless.
And when Christ said that he would come and die just for one person, how can we think of anything less? Because so many times I think my hands have been tied, I haven't been able to move. But I'm not alone as I'm working. There are many, many other people who are doing their best, church workers, women, and many others, to make a difference.
In Rwanda, the battle for the capital, Kigali, continued throughout the night. Tutsi rebels and government soldiers pounded each other's positions with mortar fire.
The militia came to get me one morning. They wanted to drag me away and then kill everyone else in the orphanage.
The militia were, one, they had killed all the prominent people, and I think they were just getting impatient. Two, they realized that their time in terms of the cleaning up the genocide, making sure that there were no witnesses left, was drawing to a close.
They tried to trick me, saying the governor wants to see you. I was suspicious, so I lied to them. I said, has the governor forgotten that I have an appointment with him at 9 this morning? So the militia pulled back and waited for me to leave. I snuck away to the office of the International Red Cross.
It was another day to just bring water to those guys. All of a sudden, these militia guys began to appear, circling the whole compound. All of them with assault rifles and grenades and stuff. Then all of a sudden a car comes sliding in the dirt parking lot there, cloud of dust, and out gets a guy we called Little Hitler.
He went up to an orphanage worker and demanded to know where Damas was hiding. When the worker did not answer, they shot him to death. Carl went crazy, calling everywhere on his radio for help.
I called Philip at the Red Cross. I said, Philip, I don't know where Damas is. We're surrounded. It looks like we're about to have a massacre. How can you help me?
All the noise Carl made on the radio got some Kigali police to show up and stop the attack.
I drove out of there. The militia didn't hassle me. I went through all the barriers. And I said, well, I'm going to the prefecture office. I went there. And the secretary who had befriended me said, listen, Wilkins, the prime minister's here today. You should ask him for help after I'd explained my situation. And I said, what? The prime minister? You know, that's like asking the devil for help. When you would get in situations where you were looking for an ally, you would look around for some sign of sympathy, whether it would just be a look or a glance, and you would appeal to that part in them. And so when the prime minister comes out with his entourage, I stand up and step forward, put my hand out, and said, Mr. Prime Minister, I'm Carl Wilkins, the director of ADRA. And he looks at me for a second. He says, "Yeah, I've heard about you and your work. How's your work going?" I said, "Well, honestly, sir, it's not going very well at all today. I'm afraid all the orphans are going to be killed." And he stops and he confers a little bit with his assistants and stuff. He turns back to me and he says, "I'm aware of the situation and I've briefed my people and we'll see to the security of your orphans." And he was gone.
A wave of militiamen came into the orphanage kicking doors open. They told us to get into the bus. We didn't know where we were going, but Carl had made some sort of a deal for the militia to let us go.
When the buses arrived at the church of San Michel, a soldier came up and said, "Who is this man Gisimba? We were told all these people are for Gisimba." They expected some sort of big, important man. I said, "I'm Gisimba." They asked how I managed to keep so many people alive for so long. I answered with a Rwandan proverb, "Even if an animal comes to you for protection, you give it sanctuary."
Rebel troops in Rwanda are celebrating in the streets of Kigali. The Rwandan Patriotic Front has taken control of the capital city. They pushed their way into Kigali this morning, capturing key positions.
When I got out, you know, the genocide's over and the airport's crawling with American soldiers and stuff. For a long time, I couldn't salute the flag. Why is it, you know, that good, decent people didn't do anything?
The thing I remember most vividly is the sense of humanity Damas Gasimba had. And also that American, the preacher Carl Wilkins, where the international community and the UN practically abandoned us. He came to our aid and took risks. I still owe him many thanks. In fact, we should give him cows. That is what we do in Rwanda for someone who has done something extremely kind. We give them cows.
Carl Wilkins is now the pastor of a Seventh-day Adventist school in rural Oregon. Damas Gasimba still directs his orphanage in Kigali, Rwanda. Our report was produced by Stephen Smith and Michael Montgomery, edited by Deborah George at American Radio Works, the National Documentary Unit of Minnesota Public Radio, in cooperation with the PBS program Frontline. For more, go to npr.org. This is Weekend Edition. I'm Linda Wertheimer.